Chapter 3, Falling in Love.
Janice showed up at my office without an appointment and asked my secretary if she could see me for 5 minutes. I had known Janice for 18 years as a disciplined, organized, and caring person. For her to show up at my office unannounced was completely out of character. I thought there must be some terrible crisis for Janice to show up without an appointment. She had dated several men through the years, one for 6 years, another for 3 years, and several others for shorter periods of time. I told my secretary to show her in, and I fully expected to see Janice burst into tears and tell me some tragic story as soon as the door was closed. Instead, she virtually skipped into my office, beaming with excitement. "How are you today, Janice?" I asked. "Great," she said. "I've never been better in my life. I'm getting married." "You are," I said, revealing my shock. "To whom and when?" "To David Gillespie," she explained, "in September." "That's exciting. How long have you been dating?" "3 weeks." "I know it's crazy, Dr. Chapman, after all the people I've dated and the number of times I came so close to getting married. I can't believe it myself. But I know David is the one for me. From the first date, we both knew it. Of course, we didn't talk about it on the first night, but 1 week later, he asked me to marry him. I knew he was going to ask me, and I knew I was going to say yes. I have never felt this way before, Dr. Chapman. You know about the relationships that I've had through the years and the struggles I've had. In every relationship, something was not right. I never felt at peace about marrying any of them, but I know that David is the right one. By this time, Janice was rocking back and forth in her chair, giggling and saying, "I know it's crazy, but I'm so happy. I have never been this happy in my life." What has happened to Janice? She has fallen in love. In her mind, David is the most wonderful man she has ever met. He is perfect in every way. He will make the ideal husband. She thinks about him night and day. The fact that David has been married twice before, has 3 children, and has had 3 jobs in the past year are trivial to Janice. She's happy, and she is convinced that she is going to be happy forever with David. She is in love. Most of us enter marriage by way of the in-love experience. We meet someone whose physical characteristics and personality traits create enough electrical shock to trigger our love alert system. The bells go off, and we set in motion the process of getting to know the person. The first step may be sharing a hamburger or steak, depending on our budget. But our real interest is not in food. We are on a quest to discover love. We ask ourselves, could this warm, tingly feeling I have inside be the real thing? Sometimes we lose the tingles on the first date. We find out that she dips snuff, and the tingles run right out our toes. We want no more hamburgers with her. Other times, however, the tingles are stronger after the hamburger than before. We arrange for a few more together experiences, and before long, the level of intensity has increased to the point where we find ourselves saying, "I think I'm falling in love." Eventually, we are convinced that it is the real thing, and we tell the other person, hoping the feeling is reciprocal. If it isn't, things cool off a bit, or we redouble our efforts to impress and eventually win the love of our beloved. When it is reciprocal, we start talking about marriage, because everyone agrees that being in love is the necessary foundation for a good marriage. At its peak, the in-love experience is euphoric. We are emotionally obsessed with each other. We go to sleep thinking of one another. When we rise, that person is the first thought on our minds. We long to be together. Spending time together is like playing in the anteroom of heaven. When we hold hands, it seems as if our blood flows together. We could kiss forever if we didn't have to go to school or work. The person who is in love has the illusion that his beloved is perfect. His mother can see the flaws, but he can't. His friends also can see the flaws, but are not likely to tell him unless he asks, and chances are he won't, because in his mind, She is perfect, and what others think doesn't matter. Our dreams before marriage are of marital bliss. We tell ourselves and anyone who will listen, we're going to make each other supremely happy. Other couples may argue and fight, but not us. We love each other. Of course, we're not totally naive. We know intellectually that we will eventually have differences, but we are certain that we will discuss those differences openly, that one of us will always be willing to make concessions, and we will reach agreement. It's hard to believe anything else when you're in love. We have been led to believe that if we're really in love, it will last forever. We will always have the wonderful feelings that we have at this moment. Nothing will ever overcome our love for each other. Unfortunately, the eternality of the in-love experience is fiction, not fact. Dr. Dorothy Tenev, a psychologist, has done long-range studies on the in-love phenomenon. After studying scores of couples, she concluded that the average lifespan of a romantic obsession is 2 years. If it is a secretive affair, it may last a little longer. Eventually, however, we will descend from the clouds and plant our feet on earth again. Our eyes will be opened, and we see the warts of the other person. We recognize that some of his personality traits are actually irritating. Her behavior patterns are annoying. He has the capacity for hurt and anger, perhaps even harsh words and critical judgments. Those little traits that we overlooked when we were in love now become huge mountains. We remember mother's words and ask ourselves, how could I have been so foolish? Welcome to the real world of marriage, where hairs are always on the sink and little white spots cover the mirror, where arguments center on which way the tissue paper comes off or whether the lid should be up or down. It is a world where shoes do not walk to the closet and drawers do not close themselves, where coats do not like hangers and socks go AWOL during laundry. In this world, a look can hurt and a word crush. Intimate lovers can become enemies and marriage a battlefield. What happened to the in-love experience? Alas, it was but an illusion by which we were tricked into signing our names on the dotted line for better or for worse. No wonder so many have come to curse marriage and the partner whom they once loved. After all, if we were deceived, we have a right to be angry. Did we have the real thing? I think we did. The problem was faulty information. The bad information was the idea that the in-love obsession would last forever. The euphoria of the in-love state is temporary, although it gives us the illusion that we have an intimate relationship and makes us feel that we belong to each other. We become obsessed with each other. As one young man said about his fiancée, I can't conceive of doing anything to hurt her. My only desire is to make her happy. I would do anything to make her happy. Such obsession gives us the false sense that our egocentric attitudes have been eradicated, and we have become sort of a Mother Teresa, willing to give anything for the benefit of the other person. That thinking is always fanciful. Not that we are insincere in what we think and feel, but we are unrealistic. We fail to reckon with the reality of human nature. By nature, we are egocentric. Our world revolves around us. None of us is totally unselfish. The euphoria of the in-love experience only gives us that illusion. Once the experience of falling in love has run its natural course, remember, the average in-love experience lasts 2 years, we will return to the world of reality and begin to assert ourselves. He will express his desires, but his desires will be different from hers. He desires sex, but she is too tired. He wants to buy a car, but she says, that's absurd. She wants to visit her parents, but he says, I don't like spending so much time with your family. He wants to play in the softball tournament, and she says, You love softball more than you love me. Little by little, the illusion of intimacy evaporates, and the individual desires, emotions, thoughts, and behavior patterns exert themselves. They are two individuals. Their minds have not melted together, and their emotions mingled only briefly in the ocean of love. Now the waves of reality begin to separate them. They fall out of love. And at that point, either they withdraw, separate, divorce, and set off in search of a new in-love experience, or they begin the hard work of learning to love each other without the euphoria of the in-love obsession. When the wave of emotion subsides and we come back to the real world where our differences are illuminated, how many of us have asked, why did we get married? We don't agree on anything. Yet at the height of the in-loveness, we thought we agreed on everything, at least everything that was important. Having been tricked into marriage by the illusion of being in love, we may think we are now faced with two options. One, we are destined to a life of misery with our spouse. Or two, we must jump ship and try again. Our generation has opted for the latter, whereas an earlier generation often chose the former. Before we automatically conclude that we have made the better choice, perhaps we should examine the data. Presently, 40% of first marriages in this country end in divorce, 60% of second marriages, and 75% of third marriages end the same way. Apparently, the prospect of a happier marriage the second and third time around is not substantial. Research seems to indicate that there is a third and better alternative. We can recognize the in-love experience for what it was, a temporary emotional high, and now we can pursue real love with our spouse. That kind of love is emotional in nature, but not obsessional. It is a love that unites reason and emotion. It involves an act of the will and requires discipline, and it recognizes the need for personal growth. Our most basic emotional need is not to fall in love, but to be genuinely loved by another. To know a love that grows out of reason and choice, not instinct. I need to be loved by someone who chooses to love me, who sees in me something worth loving. That kind of love requires effort and discipline. It is the choice to expend energy in an effort to benefit the other person, knowing that if his or her life is enriched by your effort, you will find a sense of satisfaction, the satisfaction of having genuinely loved another. The initial obsession was not meant to last forever. In the textbook of marriage, it is but the introduction. The heart of the book is rational, volitional love. That is the kind of love to which the sages have always called us. It is intentional. That is good news to the married couple who have lost all of their in-love feelings. If love is a choice, then they have the capacity to love after the in-love obsession has died and they have returned to the real world. That kind of love begins with an attitude, a way of thinking. Love is the attitude which says, I'm married to you, and I choose to look out for your interest. Then the one who chooses to love will find appropriate ways to express that decision. But it seems so sterile, some may contend. Love as an attitude with appropriate behavior? Where are the shooting stars, the balloons, the deep emotions? What about the spirit of anticipation, the twinkle of the eye, the electricity of a kiss, the excitement of sex? What about the emotional security of knowing that I'm number one in his or her mind? That is what this tape is all about. How do we meet each other's deep emotional need to feel loved? If we can learn that and choose to do it, then the love we share will be exciting beyond anything we have ever felt when we were obsessed.